Welcome to the Rail Market Update on the State of Freight podcast, brought to you by FTR, where we share timely transportation intelligence with you on a weekly basis. The Rail Market Update is hosted by FTR's Vice President of Rail and Intermodal, Todd Tranowski. As Todd presents the information in the podcast, you can follow along and review the graphs and indicators by downloading a PDF or PowerPoint version of the presentation from our podcast landing page. A link to the PDF is available now at www.ftrintel.com/podcast. From there, you can also find past episodes and downloads of the Rail Market Update, as well as the weekly Trucking Market Update with Avery Weiss and much more. That link again is www.ftrintel.com/podcast.
Hello and welcome to the FTR State of Freight Rail Market Update podcast. As always, I am your host, Todd Tranowski, the Vice President of Rail and Intermodal here at FTR. Thank you for joining us this week. And unfortunately, or fortunately, depending on your point of view, not a lot has changed in the latest week. When you look at the volume numbers, you will see that there's not a lot of change. There's not a lot of difference week to week when you look at things. Things are essentially near the historical averages in most cases, right around the five-year average number. Not a whole lot of movement. Unfortunately, uncertainty and volatility are going to remain an issue as we go forward here. We've seen certainly what's going on in Eastern Europe has only gotten worse. That has the potential to distort freight flows as we go on through the year. We've seen China start to close ports yet again as a result of increased COVID in some areas of the country. That's also going to create additional disruption, additional issues, additional hiccups in the global supply chain as we go forward here. So let's jump right in and let's talk about the numbers this week. Let's start with the intermodal side of the house. And you can see on the intermodal side, we are dead on that five-year average. We have not moved very much at all in the last few weeks, and we are right on that five-year average number. Even with a demand to move goods, even with strong consumer demand, the intermodal volumes just have not responded. And this has been the same pattern we've been locked in really since the second half of 2021, where we've essentially just stayed right at the five-year average. We haven't shown any of the signs of pressure that you see in other metrics, that you see in port volumes, that you see in port queues. You would expect this number to be a lot higher, but unfortunately, it is not. One of the reasons it is not is the trailer market. The trailer market has been weak for almost all of the year. We've been down below our five-year average. We took a step down about a month ago that we're still trying to recover from. We're still not back to the levels that we were at in early January, when from a trailer perspective, we're well below the five-year average. We are double digits percentage-wise below where we were just this time last year. The trailer market is particularly weak. Now, a lot of you have seen what's happened with energy prices, with crude prices, with diesel prices, diesel being above $5 a gallon on average across the country, according to the EIA in the latest week. That could create some momentum for some of the volumes that are moving by truck today to move back into the domestic trailer space, but we'll just have to wait and see. So far, it has not happened. Now, does that mean it's not going to happen? No, it certainly could, but we haven't seen the data yet that suggests that it is happening. On the container side of the house, containers, very much like overall intermodal, right on that five-year average number. Not a whole lot of movement, just very steady, very static. On a week-to-week basis. When you think about this on a four-week average basis, it really wouldn't move very much at all. It'd be even flatter than it already is. It's really almost flat as Kansas when you go across here over the last month or so for container volumes. Been right at that five-year average. And this is something that, as things go forward, we would hope to see additional demand, but that grows less and less certain by the day. When you think about inflation, when you think about energy prices, when you think about what that does to the average consumer's balance sheet, when you think about what that does to discretionary purchases, when you think about what that does particularly against the backdrop of a lot of durable goods purchases during the pandemic, things like washing machines, dishwashers, refrigerators, you don't go out and buy another one, in the next year. And so particularly with the erosion in personal balance sheets caused by inflation, caused by energy prices, there could be some downward pressure to this as we go forward in time. Switching gears, looking at the carload markets, The overall carload market is not as good as the overall intermodal market, surprising probably no one when you think about the difference in the industrial economy and the consumer economy coming out of the pandemic. But carload has been very volatile. It's been more volatile than you would typically expect for the carload markets if you looked over history. But either way, we are below last year. We are below the five-year average by a significant amount. And again, this is one of those charts that if you looked at it on a four-week average base and smoothed out the volatility, it'd be pretty flat. It'd be a pretty boring chart to look at. It'd be very flat, but very flat at a low level, at a weak level, at a level that if you're a rail shipper, if you're a rail carrier, you're not particularly enthralled by where the level of carload volumes are. On an economically sensitive basis, in the last week they were steady, but broadly they were about the same as the overall carload market. If you look at the trend of the year, a lot of volatility below its five-year average at or below 2021 levels. And this is significant because economically sensitive freight is going to be one of those things that's going to be a driver of carload growth as we go forward. It's going to be those sectors that are more closely tied to the underlying economy. Things like lumber and wood, things like metals, things like automotive. Those are the sectors that are going to power this number forward, and they're going to power the overall carload markets as we think about the back half of 2022 into 2023. So keep an eye on this number as we go forward. Switching gears to the bulk sectors, let's talk about the coal market. Coal has come off in recent weeks. It got up there and touched its five-year average about 3 weeks ago. We've come off those levels, but we're still at relatively strong levels compared to where we started the year, compared to where we ended 2021. And we would expect to stay here, if not go back toward that five-year average as we go through the next several months. Natural gas prices are at $4.70 per MMBTU. That makes coal competitive pretty much anywhere in the country. And with everything going on in the world, with everything going on in Ukraine, energy prices have been one of those sectors where we've seen significant inflation, where we've seen significant price pressure and price uplift. To the extent that natural gas prices remain high, that supports coal volumes. That helps coal be more competitive for electricity generators, both domestically and abroad. As we go to the second quarter, we expected to see natural gas prices drop off. Now we do not expect to see that anymore, given the way things have ratcheted up over in Ukraine. We expect to see natural gas prices remain high, and as we go through the shoulder season, utilities being consistent in their coal deliveries ahead of the summer, making sure that their inventories are appropriately stocked ahead of what could be a warm summer burn. Switching gears to grain, grain has also been highly volatile to start the year. Much like the overall carload market, it has moved up and down very dramatically over the course of 2022. If you show this on a smooth basis, it would look rather flat. It would look rather boring. On a week-to-week basis, you get a little bit more of the tick. You get a little bit more of the week-to-week gyration that's occurring. We ticked down in the last week below our five-year average. We would expect this number to run at or above the five-year average as we go forward in time, as we go particularly between now and when the harvest starts at the end of the third quarter. Once we get a harvest, then we would expect to see it go above the five-year average. Russia and Ukraine basically coming out of the global grain markets creates a real opportunity for North American product to fill that gap. Global buyers are going to have to look elsewhere to fill their needs, and North America is going to be one of the places to stand in that breach, and that translates to higher rail volumes as we go forward. Now, for the next couple of quarters, you have a little bit of a cap on how high that can go because of Canada's harvest last year being less than a lot of folks normally would see coming out of there, but you do have U.S. product to be able to fill that gap in the interim. And once you get into the harvest season, you would expect to see it really fire on all cylinders as we go forward. Looking at chemicals traffic, there was a light step down in the latest week, but the overall trend line remains positive, remains growing, remains moving up. It is above the five-year average, been above the five-year average every week this year, and it continues to do that. This is a sector that's going to have a lot of positive momentum behind it. You have chemicals demand growing, but you also have U.S. producers, particularly those that are focused for exports, those that are in the resins space, having an advantage over their global competitors. U.S. chemical manufacturing is largely done with natural gas, and while natural gas prices have increased in the wake of tensions in Eastern Europe, they have not increased as much as crude volumes. And so that gives U.S. producers a cost advantage on a feedstock basis relative to competitors that are using naphtha and other petroleum and crude-linked feedstocks. So you would expect to see demand for U.S. chemicals production continue to run at strong levels, and for this category in particular to be a strong driver of carloads as we go through the balance of 2022 and into 2023. Looking at petroleum products, petroleum is really just right at its five-year average. And you look at that and you say, Todd, you know, the run-up in crude prices should support additional volumes here. Oh, yes and no. Yes, it should, but to this point, we've seen producers be very capital disciplined. And if you dig down into the rig count number, I know there were a lot of headlines last week on Friday when the rig number came out, talking about how it was a surge in rigs and how it was a surge in rig count. Well, yes and no. When you drill down into the number, U.S.-based rigs increased by 13. Canadian-based rigs declined by 11. What that means for rail volumes is that means that production is coming online in places like Texas's Permian Basin, where you have an awful lot of pipeline takeaway capacity built into the market. Those volumes coming online are not necessarily going to translate into additional petroleum products volumes by rail. It's going to be that Canadian crude that has to get out to world markets at the Gulf Coast, either for export or for use in U.S. Gulf Coast refineries, that's really going to drive this number higher. Now, you would expect that the spread between Canada and the Gulf Coast would expand to a point where these movements would be profitable for the next year or two, but so far, we haven't seen that, and we have not seen drilling activity in Canada respond as well. So we would expect it's going to be a few more weeks before this number meaningfully moves up on that basis. Looking at crushed stone, sand, and gravel, it bounced up a couple of weeks ago. It has held at those levels. It is right about its five-year average, a little bit below, but ultimately within spitting distance of the five-year average. We'll have to see as we go forward. Certainly, that is something that commodity group has been beaten down, over the past couple of years as drilling sand has declined, as those cars have gotten repurposed. But now, as we've started to lap a lot of that, we've started to see a little bit of money from the infrastructure bill start flowing across the industry. We are back essentially to five-year average level, which is a welcome sight for those in this commodity group that has spent a long time down below their five-year average over not just 2021, but 2019, 2020 as well. Lumber and wood, the last 2 weeks have been good. We've bounced back off of a low point. We're a little bit above our five-year average in the latest week in lumber and wood. This is one, it's been pretty stable for the first part of the year, then saw a little bit of volatility, but ultimately, again, it's one of those, if you look at it on a four-week average basis, it would be fairly steady. It would be a pretty boring line. Now, we're going to have to watch as we go forward. The home builder sentiment index came out this morning, and it was particularly dour. It was particularly weak, particularly with mortgage rates going up. We'll have to see exactly what that does for lumber demand as we go forward. If home builders are not looking to build additional inventory, are looking to slow their expansion and slow their growth on the back of higher mortgage rates, that could be a negative for this commodity group as we go through not just this year, but into the future. Pulp and paper, it's bounced off the bottom. It declined significantly over the last 3 weeks. We saw a little bit of a bounce back in the last week, but still running at a very weak level. Still a very weak result, well below last year, well below the five-year average. And pulp and paper is one of those sectors, you've heard me say it once, you've heard me say it 100 times. As the pandemic restrictions go away, as people get more comfortable going back to malls, doing more in-person interactions, in-person shopping, that means there's less e-commerce demand, there's less parcel demand, there's less need for cardboard boxes to ship things to your door. That is something we're going to have to watch as we go forward. This is a sector that could hold below its five-year average for most of the year as we go forward. Automotive volumes certainly have ticked up over the last month, but they've ticked up from a very weak level. They are still not at a healthy point. They are still well below last year, well below the five-year average, and we'll have to see here. I mean, I said it last week, I'll say it again. I am in a wait-and-see attitude for this commodity group, given the breadth of semiconductor issues, of plastic resin issues, of rubber issues to get finished vehicles out to dealers. I think we're going to have a long road to hoe here, particularly when you see what's going on in China with some of the lockdowns that are going on, with the shuttering of chip manufacturing facilities in those regions. I think this is a commodity group that's going to be lower for longer, and I'm going to wait until I actually see an uptick, until I actually see sustained strength to say that we've turned the corner here, given that every time we seem to get an update from automotive, it is pushing out the timeline for restoration. There was just an article the other day saying that some of the units that are being shipped out to dealers right now in the light vehicle space are actually unfinished. We had seen that in the Class 8 market at the end of 2021. This is something that we could potentially see again in 2022 in the light vehicle space. And that is something you do not typically see in the light vehicle space, but it's something that could be with us and could distort these numbers a little bit as we go through the course of the year. So let's wrap up and let's talk about the fact that we've seen a high level of week-to-week volatility in intermodal and cargo to start the year, but on a smooth basis, there hasn't really been a lot of movement. It's been really a steady picture, just right about the five-year average in most cases, without any sort of pressure one way or the other. On the good news for railroads, train crew employment, particularly operating employees, jumped up in February. We got the latest, greatest data hot off the presses this morning from the STB about train crew employment, and it jumped across the board at six of the seven Class 1 railroads in February, signaling that maybe we're turning the corner, maybe we're starting to move in the right direction, maybe we will, over the next coming months as we get into the summer, we will actually start to see rail service improve. Again, sort of like automotive, I'm going to take a wait-and-see approach there, but at least the numbers suggest that we could be turning the corner there. We could be maybe turning this ship away from the iceberg as we go through the next several months. And with that, I am going to wrap up. I'll remind everybody before I do, mark your calendars, September 13th to 16th to be in Indianapolis, Indiana at the Crown Plaza Union Station for the FTR Transportation Conference. We'd love to see you there. We'd love to have you be part of our event. We have four great days planned this year on the truck freight, the truck and trailer equipment, the rail freight, and the rail equipment sides of the house. You will not want to miss it. We're bringing together a lot of good industry thought leaders to provide their perspective. You'll get the FTR outlook on the year ahead. It will be a must-see event that you will want to be a part of this September. Mark your calendars now. And with that, I'm going to wrap up. Thank you for listening this week. Talk to you again next week. As always, I am your host, Todd Trinowski, the Vice President of Rail and Intermodal here at FTR. Feel free to reach out to myself or any member of the FTR team if you ever want to discuss the markets, talk about what you're hearing in the podcast, what you're seeing in the reports, what your company's seeing in the marketplace. We love to talk about the industry. Feel free to reach out anytime. And with that, have a great week. We'll talk to you again next week.
That's it for this week's Rail Market Update on the State of Freight podcast. The Rail Market Update will be published each week along with a downloadable PDF of the presentation. If you find this transportation intelligence useful, please take a moment to give us a positive rating on your podcast platform of choice and send us your feedback by email at podcast@ftrintel.com. You can find more publicly available State of Freight content and download the PDF of today's presentation by going to www.ftrintel.com/podcast. FTR is the leader in freight transportation forecasting in North America, providing consistently reliable reports for trucking, rail, and intermodal transportation, as well as providing demand analysis for commercial vehicle and rail car. For more information about the work of FTR, visit www.ftrintel.com or call us at 888-988-3030. 1699 to find out which publications will best support your business.